I no longer see people how I would rewrite them. I see them for how they write themselves. When I read that, I was like, okay, that quote right there is gonna be a staple in the workshops that I lead with teachers, in the coaching sessions, in the conversations, and it's gonna be something that I post up in my office on my laptop so that I can see that and remind myself that in my own personal life and in my professional life that I have to be careful about writing someone else's story.
Ooh-wee, this is going to be a good episode. And I really don't want to hold you back from jumping in because stories are powerful, powerful resources for building bridges of empathy. Now, as you're listening to this episode and thinking through the nuances of your story, the written and the rewritten, the beautiful and the broken, know that we are in this together. I love sharing tips and strategies and pieces of my own story on this podcast every week. But let me just tell you that to truly see a shift in the stories being told for and about others, it's time to figuratively get up and walk, jog, run, take off soaring. And to help you do this, I have created lessons and lesson plans. I have recorded mini courses to help you elevate the learning experience in your classroom. All of these resources are available on my website, customteachingsolutions.com, at 20% off if you use the promo code PODCASTCTS, all lowercase. And now, if you really want some impact, if you're really ready for impact, talk to your leadership team. Ask them about bringing me to your school to partner with you all this year so that we can truly create the school culture that you all deserve. Now, I am already headed to South Carolina and Minnesota and Michigan, and I would be happy to add your school or district to my travel schedule. And also, let me just share this. There is something new coming your way very soon. Now, I can't share all of the details because I'm still working through some of the nuances, but I will be sharing some secrets to success with using culturally relevant pedagogy. And like I said, I can't give you more details right now, but they are coming soon. And just know that I am cooking up a very special opportunity for you and I to share space and to really dive into all the things culturally relevant pedagogy, your lessons and any questions that you have. And you can do this without bringing me to your school for a workshop. Okay, so be on the lookout. Let's fade to the intro. Hey, hey, welcome to the Culture Centered Classroom Podcast, a space for educators looking to step into their power by creating a classroom environment and lessons that affirm, welcome, and celebrate all their students through instruction. I'm your host, Jocelyn Hubbard, an educator, teacher coach, wife, mother to 5 children, and your partner on this journey of creating culture-centered classrooms. Let's jump into the episode.
Hello, hello. I am excited to talk to you today about how to practically use culturally relevant and responsive teaching in your classroom. But before I do that, I want to make sure that we are on the same page about what these terms, what these phrases actually mean. Culturally relevant teaching, culturally responsive teaching. Although those two phrases are often lumped together, there are some nuances and some variations. But they do work very well together, right? They complement each other, and I believe that they should be used together. First, I want to define both the words relevant and responsive. I've already defined the word culture at length in season 1, episode 2. The episode is called What is Culture? So you can run right on back and check that out. I will also make sure that I link to that episode in the show notes. So the word responsive, according to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, it is quick to respond or react appropriately or sympathetically, whereas relevant means having significant or demonstrable bearing on the matter at hand. So even hearing these two definitions, I think you can see how these phrases are approaching teaching from slightly different vantage points, but again, they work well together. So the commonality is in the words culture and the word teaching, of course, but it's that second word that encourages teachers to consider culture and to consider teaching in specific ways. So again, when you're thinking about culturally responsive teaching, right, you are obviously considering the culture of yourself as well as the culture of the students in your classroom, and you are responding to that knowledge, right? When you're thinking about your own culture, you are responding to the way that your own culture impacts the way that you think about certain things. And maybe that response means, maybe it means changing or shifting an expectation that you might have. And then thinking about your students, when you understand their culture, you are able to respond appropriately or sympathetically, thinking about behavior and disciplinary measures or even ways to reward certain students. So if you know that a student culturally does not recognize or celebrate their birthdays, then that's an opportunity for you to respond in a way that is appropriate and sympathetic to their personal beliefs. And then cultural relevance. So of course you are bringing in aspects of that student's culture that are relevant to the ways that you are asking them to engage in the classroom and are relevant to the lessons that need to be learned. Now, in season one, episode 3, called The Benefits of Creating a Culture-Centered Classroom, I briefly defined culturally relevant pedagogy as one that encourages teachers to observe the cultural and ethnic makeup of the students in their classroom for the purposes of incorporating practices, language, and texts from those cultures and ethnicities to both affirm these students and positively educate other students. And then I said that culturally relevant practices are an extension, right? They build on culturally responsive pedagogy. And in this way, they are encouraging teachers to be culturally competent themselves, right? That means that you understand and you know your own culture, you value your own culture, and then you get to know and learn about other cultures so that you have the ability to understand and effectively communicate and educate students of multiple racial and ethnic backgrounds. So those are kind of a few ways that I've started to think about culturally relevant teaching practices and culturally responsive teaching and pedagogy. But I want to go a little bit deeper. I want to break this down a little bit more. Dr. Gloria Ladson-Billings, who is the mother of culturally relevant teaching, and Dr. Geneva Gay, who has done extensive research on culturally responsive pedagogy, are two women that you need to know. You gotta know. They are phenomenal. They are very important. They are the foremost experts on this type of work. So the practical framework, the tips and the action steps that I've created are derived from the work of these ladies and a few other scholars as well. In a journal article titled, "But That's Just Good Teaching, The Case for Culturally Responsive Pedagogy," Dr. Gloria Ladson-Billings says, "I have defined culturally relevant teaching as a pedagogy of oppression, not unlike critical pedagogy, but specifically committed to the collective, not merely individual empowerment. Culturally relevant pedagogy rests on 3 criteria or propositions. The first is that students must experience academic success. The second is that students must develop and or maintain cultural competence." So not just the teachers, but also the students. "And the third proposition is that students must develop a critical consciousness through which they challenge the status quo of the current social order." She also says in her book titled The Dream Keepers that culturally relevant teaching is a pedagogy that empowers students intellectually, socially, emotionally, and politically by using cultural reference to impart knowledge, skills, and attitudes. These cultural reference are not merely vehicles for bridging or explaining the dominant culture. Okay. they are aspects of the curriculum in their own right. So I'm not just using the culture of my students so that I can further explain the ways of the dominant culture. No, I am using the culture of the students in my classroom for the sake of them seeing themselves and also understanding that their culture matters. Now to build on that, to kind of continue this conversation, Dr. Geneva Gay said in an interview with Dr. Easton Brooks of the University of South Dakota, he is one of the deans of the School of Education at the time of that recording, she said that culturally responsive pedagogy is when we use the culture of students as a resource to help us serve their needs more effectively. And in serving their needs, we do this in such a way that the population does not feel that they need to compromise their cultural identity and socialization to have access to other opportunities, right? So they don't have to change who they are in order to be admitted into honors classes, IB classes, in order to have career opportunities and so forth. Now, she also goes on to say, and I'm gonna paraphrase this, but I'm gonna link to that interview in the show notes. So I highly encourage you to go and listen to it because it's really good. She says along the lines of that using culturally responsive pedagogy requires the educator to be deeply grounded in cultural knowledge. So that's cultural competence, right? Your own and others. This will allow for the learning about other cultures to happen without the filter of someone else's frame of reference. So there is an authenticity in the information that is gained. Now, an example of this is like when we learn about the indigenous peoples of the United States or of many countries around the world, right? That their story is told from the lens of the colonizer. And often the research that is done about other groups is done by a person who's not a part of that culture. And so when the research is interpreted, processed, and then relayed and shared with other people, it is done through the lens of that other person's culture. And so many times it can come off as in a way that doesn't normalize or doesn't make the other culture seem like it is, well, normal, right? Like it's like, oh, it's weird, it's foreign, it's this or that. And so Dr. Geneva Gay is making sure that we understand that in a culturally responsive classroom, in when we're using culturally responsive teaching practices, that we want to make sure that we are getting an authentic set of information to use with our students. And what better resource than our students, especially when we're talking about referencing their own culture. Now, you don't want to use the one student as the example, right? As the spokesperson for all the cultures. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that allowing them to feel comfortable to share their story and their experience, not making them, but creating an atmosphere where we are consistently hearing from authentic voices and experiencing authentic perspectives, then that's going to create a safe space where a child is going to feel empowered to want to share their own stories. So with that being said, okay, because that was a lot. But many times on this podcast, I share ways that you can create a welcoming and inclusive environment. And I'm using culturally relevant pedagogy and culturally relevant and responsive teaching as my foundation. But I haven't actually defined it for you. I haven't actually given you this foundational knowledge. And now I will link in the show notes to the authors, the scholars that I referenced. So Dr. Gloria Ladson Billings and her journal articles and the books that she has written, as well as Dr. Geneva Gay. She has also written journal articles and written books. And I will make sure that I link to a couple of other scholars that I find to be really pivotal, that their work has been very transformational. So there is Zaretta Hammond and her work, Culturally Responsive Teaching in the Brain. You have Dr. Goldie Muhammad, who wrote Cultivating Genius, which is a historically and linguistically historical framework. I'm butchering the name of it right now. I apologize because that book is phenomenal. So I'll make sure I link to it in the show notes. And then another book that I really have enjoyed is Choosing to See. And that book was written by Dr. Kendall Brown and Pamela Sita. So I'll make sure I link to those works so that you can continue to do this work on your own, right? Independently. And then we can continue to have these conversations. So without further ado, I want to make sure that I share with you these five ways to ensure that you are knowledgeable about and intentional when leveraging the culture of your students in an effort to increase student engagement and academic achievement in your class. So again, we're thinking about those words and those definitions, those phrases. So the first thing is to consider the filters and the lenses through which you were taught to be a teacher and the impact that has on the way that you teach. For myself, I would consider my own learning experience in school, as well as at home, church, summer camps, wherever else I was taught some things. And then I would reflect on the education program that provided my formal teacher training. And then finally, I would consider the culture of the schools where I previously taught. And then think about the attitudes of leadership and other teachers at that school towards student achievement and appropriate behavior and ability to question ideologies in an effort to grow and develop critical thinking skills. So that's the first thing, is to consider the filters and the lenses through which you were taught to teach. The second is to get to know your students authentically. Excuse me. And this means allowing them to write their own story, to tell their own story. You want to learn about the lived experiences that have shaped their academic identity, as well as their personal individual identity. Shonda Rhimes wrote a book called The Year of Yes, and I highly recommend that you read it. And in that book, she says, "I no longer see people how I would rewrite them. I see them for how they write themselves." When I read that, I was like, okay, that quote right there is going to be a staple in the workshops that I lead with teachers, in the coaching sessions and the conversations. And it's going to be something that I post up in my office on my laptop so that I can see that and remind myself that in my own personal life and in my professional life, that I have to be careful about writing someone else's story. So that means that we want to allow for our students to grow and to change and to become the best versions of themselves. This means truly setting aside the stories from last year, even if you were their teacher, because there was a year when I taught seventh grade and then I went up and looped up or whatever, and I taught that same group of students in eighth grade. And I seriously had to lay down the stories from the previous year. Now, I did not lay down the relationships, right? Because we had started to build a relationship, but I wanted to give them a chance to rewrite their own story, to write a new story. And this means that even with your students who have an IEP or a 504, yes, you want to keep that information in your mind because that is going to inform the way that you design their lessons, of course, right? And the amount of time that they are given on certain activities and all of that. But do not allow it to define that student, okay? The 504 and the IEP helps to define their learning experience, but it does not define the student. And we don't want it to limit their ability and their potential in your classroom. The third thing to consider is that you want to intentionally audit and revamp lessons that you have already created. So consider the lesson that you're going to revamp in regard to the cultural identities of the new students in your class. Think about any current events that might have increased their awareness, that might have increased their awareness of certain topics, but then might also make your lesson more relevant because it's got real world connections. Also, think about opportunities for your students to learn about themselves during this lesson. So again, you've got a new group of students and they are going to have other learning needs, lessons that they're going to need to learn about themselves that are different, right? That are different from the lessons maybe that some of your other students were learning in previous years. I want you to think about how this lesson can affirm a child's identity, how it can celebrate their curiosity, how it can celebrate their curiosity about understanding different beliefs and behaviors and ways of being, and how it can welcome the opportunity to grow and to change as they reflect and learn. The fourth thing to consider, the fourth way to use culturally relevant pedagogy in your classroom, is to remember to incorporate the four types of resources: windows, mirrors, maps, and sliding glass doors. Now, I've talked about these in season 2, episode 4, I think. Should have looked this up before I started talking. But I talked about these four types of resources, and I want you to remember to incorporate those when you're selecting materials to support learning. This means the books, of course, in your classroom library, as well as the posters that are on the wall in your classroom, and the information that is shared about important and influential people in each discipline, the partnerships that you create with outside organizations and the people that are brought in to speak on a particular topic or to help mentor the students. How do we want to make sure that all of that, because those are all resources, right? Just textbooks and computers, those are not the only resources. But how can we ensure that we are intentionally incorporating those four types of resources? And then the fifth way to use culturally relevant pedagogy in your class is to ask the three anchor questions. And I've talked about these three anchor questions on several different episodes. So, I mean, I will list a couple of them in the show notes, but almost on every single episode, I talk about these anchor questions because, hence and forth, the reason why I call them anchor questions. I ask myself these questions all the time. I encourage all of the teachers that I partner with to ask these three questions all of the time. And I do that because it allows you to keep a student-centered and a relevant focus every single day, every single time you plan a lesson, every single time you interact with your students. And just as a reminder, the three anchor questions are: 1, what might my students learn about themselves? 2, what might my students learn about their peers locally, nationally, globally? And 3, what might my students learn about the world around them? Now, again, that is not just limited to when they're reading a book, what are they learning about themselves? No, I mean, every interaction. So if a child is going to the front office and they are engaging with anyone in the front office staff, right? Whether it's the nurse, maybe she's located up there, but it's the principal, someone sitting at the front desk. What is that student learning about themselves and their ability to communicate with this person, their ability to advocate for themselves? All of that is culturally responsive and culturally relevant. And that is why this is, I mean, I'm talking about it being used in your classroom, but like, isn't all the world a classroom, right? Every space is a classroom because it is an opportunity for us to learn. I hope that these definitions and 5 practical ways to implement these pedagogies are helpful for you. You may want to listen to this episode again so that you can really nail down those definitions and think about what those two pedagogies, what those two phrases mean to you, what they look like for you in real life, and then to go back through those 5 ways that you can use culturally relevant pedagogy in your classroom. Remember that this is a partnership. You and I are partners on this journey, and I am honored that you would show up every week and listen to this podcast to gain some new insights and inspiration. And I don't want you to get stuck. So don't hesitate to reach out to me on Instagram or on LinkedIn to send me a message and ask me any questions. But also remember that if you have a specific need, right? If you want some specific support with lesson plans and curriculum mapping and classroom library audits, because listen, I'm just going to be honest. I love a good chat in the IG DMs, but if you really want me to help you with a lesson plan, I cannot really do that over DM. Like, we need to sit down, we need to get together on a Zoom call and let me see what it is that you're doing so that I can help you, so that I can partner with you and be, you know, be a thought partner as well as just a partner in conversation. So I will make sure that I drop a link in the show notes for you to be able to sign up for a coaching call if you so choose. I would definitely love to partner with you in that way. And I will also make sure, like I said, that I link to all of the resources that I talked about in this episode, the books, the journal articles, all of that. All right, my friend, until next Wednesday, I hope that you enjoy the rest of your day.
That's a wrap on today's episode, but it does not have to be a wrap on the action you're taking in your classroom. The perfect next step is to head over to customteachingsolutions.com/the checklist and grab the free resource I created just for you. It's called the Ultimate Classroom Diversity Checklist, and it has 5 simple steps that you can take to create a much more welcoming and inclusive classroom today. All right, my friend, grab your free resource, and we'll chat next week.